What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. According to research by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as many as 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will experience sexual abuse before the age of 18. Joelle Castex, a victim herself and author of the recently released The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse, joins 411 Teen. Joelle, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for sharing. Look forward to hearing what you have to say. What was your impetus for writing your recently released book, The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse? As I understand, you were a victim of sexual abuse yourself.
Yes, when I was between the ages of 15 and 17, I was sexually abused by one of my high school teachers. And it was at a large Catholic high school in Southern California. And what was even more tragic than the fact that I was abused was the fact that other teachers and administrators knew about the abuse and didn't do anything to stop it. And it took me a long time to recover and to become whole and to realize that the abuse is not my fault, mm-hmm. and that children are never at fault when it comes to child sexual abuse by a person in a position of power. And in my 30s, when my own son was born, by this time I had already done many years of advocacy work on behalf of other adult survivors. I have spoken with survivors everywhere from Alaska to Guam to Delaware to pretty much every state in the union, and I realized that the patterns and the ways that predators get access to kids is the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so when my own son was born, I realized I had this wonderful treasure trove of information that most parents didn't have, and that the way to prevent abuse is not through scare tactics, but through simple, accountable, and easily copyable things that you can do starting mm-hmm. at your child's birth to ensure that they are well-armored and that they have strong self-esteem and that they know that they are in charge and in control of their own bodies.
Well, I read your book. I commend you on your book. It's easy. It's a good, easy-to-read resource for parents, yet it's very thorough and comprehensive. So, you know, a job well done. I thought it was very informative.
Well, thank you.
What is the definition of a well-armored child?
Well, a well-armored child is a child with authentic self-esteem and authentic confidence. Mm-hmm. This is a child who has strong communication skills, who understands and knows all the biological names of their body parts, and does not mix up their body parts with any kind of shame or thoughts of sex, and the stigma that may have with it. The well-armored child knows that they never have to be touched when they don't want to be touched. And if anything feels weird, that they know that they can always come to their parents and talk about it. The well-armored child knows that they are never to touch any other person in their genitalia, and they're to never even hug another person without that person's permission. The well-armored child is a child who understands, when they're older, how to report abuse, mm-hmm. how to help those who've been abused, and how to make sure that they don't carry the burden of other people's secrets. And as they grow into adulthood, they become adults who report abuse, who protect children, and who work hard to ensure that we have victim-friendly laws nationwide.
And before we really get into the meat of the conversation, share with us just what is child sexual abuse.
Well, child sexual abuse is the violation of a child's body by an adult or another child for some kind of sexual gratification. It does not have to be what we as adults would define mm-hmm. as intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a variety of different things that include sexualized kissing and hugging, things that can cause significant trauma to the child, and it does follow a big continuum. And, you know, I often say that even bullying is very low-level sexual abuse because it is an abuse of power. It has nothing to do with sex. It is an abuse of power.
Well, you know, the sad reality is that society really is in denial. I mean, child sexual abuse exists all across all socioeconomic, all racial boundaries, all religious boundaries, and yet we still consider talking about it taboo. What's going on there?
Well, you know, to cut us a little bit of slack, we've come a long way in the past.
Now, yes, we have, but we aren't where we need to be.
Oh, yeah, and we are still on a journey. But I think it's because for so long, we as a society equated our sexuality with something that should be shameful. And fortunately, as we move on and we understand that children have the right to never be sexually exploited, that we are able to separate the shame from the abuse. And the more that survivors talk about it, the more we're able to get the crime out of the shadows. We don't want to normalize it by any means, but we do want to normalize the fact that it's always okay for a survivor to come forward and talk. Because the more we talk about it, the more we have the skills to combat it. And I think that just for so many people, especially when it comes to our institutions, whether that institution be our church, our clubs, or our family, we always want to protect those things. And especially in cases of incest, it is such an abomination on so many levels that people can't even comprehend how something so terrible can happen in their own home. Mm-hmm. And that's why it exists in shame and silence.
Indeed. So often the information that parents have is incorrect. I mean, and I'm thinking about things like, well, women don't abuse, or my child would never allow that to happen. My child would walk away. And, you know, thinking of things like that, how do we get people to move beyond those inaccuracies, at least to say the least, you know, those really misconceptions that are just very, very dangerous?
Well, you know, our number one tool is education. It's things like my book and other resources that are available. And we can see, too, that even law enforcement, when you brought up the idea about women as abusers, law enforcement is finally waking up to it, and we're getting rid of old stereotypes. We need to understand that our children may be strong in many ways, but every child can be vulnerable to child sexual abuse unless we give them tangible tools to stop it. And sticking our heads in the sand will not prevent child sexual abuse. But actually empowering our children and informing them is what will help them not be an easy target.
Let's look at the predator and the ideology. I mean, where do these abusers come from? What are they about? What's going on there?
That's the question of the century. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, there have been studies all over the place, people trying to figure out what causes an adult, or in many cases a child, because we do have children who sexually abuse, what causes them to do something like this? And we realize, number one, it is an abuse of power. Number two, these are people who have a severe deficiency, and we don't know exactly what that deficiency is and what that mental illness is, but studies and clinicians and researchers have found time and time again that it is very difficult to cure these kinds of people unless there is very early intervention. But one thing we have found is that predators have many, many things in common. I mean, the vast majority of child sexual abuse, upwards of 90%, is by someone the child knows, loves, and trusts. We're not talking about kidnapping. We're not talking about stranger danger. And so we're talking about very cunning and smart adults who take advantage of the relationships that they have to manipulate a child into becoming what we call a compliant victim. And that is a victim who has been manipulated so horribly they don't have the capability or the understanding to fight back or say no. And we find this is called a grooming behavior.
Grooming
predators
process.
Groom
mm-hmm.
children using manipulation and flattery and gifts and attention to twist the child and make the child make the predator the center of the child's world. And while predators come in all shapes and sizes, they come from every background, race, socioeconomic, religious, they when it comes to the 90% of sexual abuse by someone the child knows, they all follow the same grooming pattern.
Well, will you share some of the signs of grooming that may be really crucial for parents to know so that they can recognize that may help them?
Definitely. So we're looking at an adult or an older child who is in the process of, again, creating what we call this compliant victim. And there are many signs, and not one sign alone may not be indicative, all the signs together can. You know, number one is attention. If there is an adult paying particular attention to your child or to a child that is exceptional, and that adult doesn't treat other children the same way, that is a sign. Because what the predator is doing is that he's making the child, the potential victim, feel important, feel loved.
Mm-hmm.
The child looks back and says, wow, this person cares about me more than that person cares about all the other kids here, and that makes me feel special. We look at gifts. You'll see an adult give a child extraordinary gifts that are above and beyond what an adult should give. We're not talking about Christmas presents or birthday presents. We're talking about expensive gifts, technology, phones, prepaid credit cards, for girls, jewelry. And these gifts are often kept secret. So sports memorabilia, tickets to games, things like that, that the parents may not be able to afford. And then, you know, there's that alienation that's involved, and the child feels like they have to accept the gift because it's so expensive. There's flattery, you know, telling the child how wonderful, mature, talented, how special they are, and doing it in a way that makes the child think that they are very, very unique in the eyes of this one adult. And then that goes into things, and that this is a great sign, and that is if an adult asks a child to keep secrets.
That's...
And whenever I talk to parents, I say, you know, always enforce the no secrets rule and tell your child that if an adult ever wants them to keep a secret, then that's a sign of trouble.
Let me add into that no secrets rule, because I was going to talk to you about that. I think we need to emphasize here that that applies at all levels, not just with toddlers, all the way up through teens and high school, because still they may keep secrets. As you mentioned, they get those expensive gifts, and they don't say anything about it, and you just happen to look up and find out that your child has a $500 telephone or something. Those are also indicated. Yes, and, you know, so it happens at all levels. We are going to take a brief break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with Joelle Castex, and she is sharing information about her new book, The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me is Joelle Castex. She's written a new book, The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse. It provides age-specific tools for parents to help their child or children repel sexual predators. Joelle, we were just talking about preventing grooming and from that predator. And basically what I really hear you saying is that the parents have to be vigilant. They have to be vigilant at all levels. And communication is another one of those key words and behaviors that needs to occur at all times. I mean, I know in reading your book, it was communication at the toddler level. It was communication at middle school. It was communication even when you have your college-level student. Would you agree, disagree, or elaborate on that some?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And the thing is that we cannot always be there with our children. We can't wrap them in bubble wrap, and we can't be around them 24 hours a day. And so we have to empower them to be able to stand up in their world and be confident. And that number one tool is communication. Because if your child knows that at any given time he or she can come to you and say, Mom, Dad, something happened and I don't understand or I need your help. Or if a friend comes to them and that friend discloses abuse or anything, that your child knows that you are always there to talk through issues, to bounce ideas off of, and that you are there to help. And that, again, you're right, from toddlerhood, as soon as they can speak, all the way up to college age, mm-hmm. because it's communication, that the lack of communication that got me into an abuser's hands, and lack of communication that got almost every other victim I know in the hands of a predator. Because if parents can't communicate with a child, it's the predator who's going to get right in between mm-hmm. and become the sole source of information for
mm-hmm.
that child.
Yeah, they become, you know, that child, as you mentioned, sole source of information. That child will refer to them all the time and forget about the parent altogether. The parent is, you know, excluded.
So exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about earlier looking at institutions and how institutions may create a problem there. And I'm thinking about institutions. I'm thinking about religion. I'm thinking about service organizations, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, that kind of thing, for example. Because so often, you know, what we're talking about really is good people doing bad things. How do you address the special case of institutions? Say religion. And I know that that's something that you feel very strongly about as far as institutional abuse is concerned.
You know, my opinion is this. No institution is going to protect your child the way you
mm-hmm.
will. An institution will instantly protect itself. And when we look at institutions, even let's look at other institutional abuses, things like the Enron crisis.
Right. Yeah.
Good people did bad things for the sake of the institution. Or there was that institutional disregard of, oh, well, everyone else is doing it. It's okay for me to do it, too.
Right.
And that's never acceptable when it comes to our children. And so I always take the view of, you know, faith is a very, very important aspect of people's lives. But an institution around faith should always be taken with a grain of salt. And remember that any institution is run by people, and an institution will protect itself. They have policies and procedures in place to protect their financial liability, to protect their needs, and to make sure that they continue to exist into the future. And if a child coming forward saying, I was sexually abused, might get in the way of that, they will go for the institution and protect the institution as opposed to finding out the truth for the child.
Yes.
So I always tell parents, you know, trust but verify, and realize that an institution will do and say what it needs to protect itself.
Don't let your guard down. You have to be vigilant, even with the institution.
Exactly.
Yeah. Joelle, you identified the five most common misconceptions about child abuse education. I want to ask you to share those with 411 team, because I think dispelling these myths is a starting point. You know, if you have parents holding on to these myths, that's going to prevent growth and it's going to prevent education. And they're going to be operating, you know, with a incorrect premise. So if you don't mind, would you share those?
Definitely. I think that misconception number one is that my child is too young to know about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my son is 9 years old. And you can tell as your child gets older and as the children in his class, you know, everyone matures at a different level, that when he was ready to learn a little bit more about the mechanics of sex, he started to ask questions. But he was never too young to know the proper names of his body parts. And there was nothing, and teaching him that he has a penis and he has testicles
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with sex, and it doesn't take away his innocence.
How do you get people, to understand that? Having the correct terms, how can you communicate if you don't have the correct terms?
Well, and I constantly tell people this is important for the two reasons that kids need to know. Number one is that, let's say that something does happen. Let's say that someone does attempt to sexually abuse your child, or a child is sexually
mm-hmm.
abused. A child who has proper names of his body parts can tell the police.
Exactly.
And the second thing is that predators want children who don't understand
mm-hmm.
their bodies, because then they can manipulate it for their own good. For example, You know, a victim I worked with called her vagina and labia area, called that her ha-ha. And so when a predator got to her and began to groom her and blur sexual boundaries, he said, "Oh, what's that?" And she said, "It's my ha-ha." And he replied with, "Oh, I love to laugh. Can I see your ha-ha?"
Mm-hmm.
Where the child who knows, hey, that's my vagina. No one looks at it. No one touches it.
That's right.
No way. A predator will step back and say, this kid's not an easy target. I'm going to move on to an easier target.
Important point. Very important point. What? Go ahead.
There are other misconceptions, too. Do you want me to go through
that? Yeah, go right on.
Oh, okay. Number two is that children shouldn't be exposed to discussions about sexual abuse. And this is, I constantly get into discussions with parents about this because they say, well, I don't want to take away my child's innocence.
Yeah.
And I said, well, but what about the child who's sexually abused at age 8 and they don't know what it is? And you don't have to be graphic, and you don't have to take away your child's innocence. But you can say, hey, no one is to touch your penis, and you are not to touch anyone else's. And if it happens, you come to mom. Because that may be called sexual abuse, and that's all you need to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fear. It's just like all the other rules. You know, no one hits you in the head with a baseball bat either. And we don't live in fear, you know.
Right.
Another one is about the misconception of stranger danger. I said earlier, you know, 99% or 90% of sexual abuse happens by someone the child knows and loves.
Yeah.
And I always tell parents, you know, self-defense classes for kids are awesome because they help build authentic self-esteem. But the real danger is by the person you already know, love, and trust.
Right.
And then I think the next one is the big one, which is, you know, my kid avoid the situation.
My kid
would punch an abuser. My kid would run away.
That's right. Of course, you know, they did a study on that, and parents were really blown away, simulating what would happen. Many of those who thought their children would walk away, they did exactly the opposite.
Exactly. And unless we tell our children and give them tools, we can't assume that they know what to do.
Right.
We don't assume our children know math.
Right.
We teach them math. And we can't assume that our children know what to do if someone tries to groom them or coax them into a van or whatever unless we tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, I've been very upfront with my son and said, hey, if someone gives you a gift, just come and give it to mom. And I won't necessarily take it away, but I need to know.
Mm.
If someone makes you feel hinky or weird, come and talk to mom. And so I've already thrown all those things out there so that, let's say something does happen, my kid's not totally confused. He's like, hey, wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
Somewhere, I remember my mother saying something about that. I think I can go talk to her about it.
Right. And again, that's that open communication. Feeling like you can say something two ways. You know, the kid feels like they can approach you, and you definitely are open and receptive and will approach them correctly with appropriate names and terms. So all of that is very important. Back to education.
Yeah, and we have to take just even the embarrassment that we all have about talking about our bodies. Because, you know, I'm from a different generation than my son, and I grew up in an environment where if you said the word vagina in school, you got a detention.
Mm.
And so, you know, my son knows it's just a word, like lung or liver. It's just a body part. And so if we take away the embarrassment that we have and the shame that we have, and we talk to our kids about their bodies like we talk to our kids about basketball and all the other things that have rules and boundaries, then our kids will say, hey, that if an adult tries to be sexual with them, hey, that's wrong, because my mom talked about that once, and she wasn't scared or embarrassed, and she didn't yell at me about it. And so we as adults really just need to take away our old baggage, get rid of it, and be as mature as possible and realize that protecting our children and talking about their bodies has absolutely nothing to do with sex.
Well, what about the relationship, parental relationships? I think so much. Often you may hear parents that they want to be their child's friend. We are best friends. But in this type of situation, I really don't think it's about being the friend. I think a parent has to be the parent, because that comes with a different position. You're coming from a different perspective. How do you feel about that? Because that's something you hear so often. I just want to be real good friends with you know, my child.
You know, your child doesn't want you to be their parent. Your child wants you to be their parent. Your child needs strong rules and boundaries in order to thrive. And the only way to give your child strong boundaries is by being an adult and being the parent. And a great example I give people, and I use this on my husband, and we were talking about boundaries, and I said, you know, your first day at work, did you just walk in and they said, sit wherever you want and do whatever you want? No. You had a job description. You had a supervisor. You may have had direct reports. It's boundaries. And it's the same thing. Your child yearns for consistency, for boundaries, for rules, and for guidance. They have all the friends they need. And if you really want to be friends with your child, hold your breath and wait until they're 25. And then you can
be friends.
Yes. And you have a long time after that. But right now, when your kid is a child and a young adult, they need a parent.
What are the signs of abuse? Can you share that for parents who, you know, aren't quite sure, but what are the signs of abuse?
Well, the signs of sexual abuse are also very similar to the signs of drug addiction, alcoholism, and other traumatic things that happen to a child, anorexia, bulimia. And what you're looking for are severe changes in their habits, attitude, and general disposition. So if a normally you had this outgoing, bubbly child doing great in school who's suddenly hiding in her room all the time, you have a child who used to love to play musical instruments but now is throwing them away. The child may become reclusive, engage in things like cutting and hurting themselves, become very, very depressed, begin to abuse alcohol and drugs, shut themselves out from their normal support system, do badly in school, become very, very rebellious against authority figures, may want to totally push out a particular adult in their lives. And that is a very big sign when sexually abused teenagers begin to say, hey, I'm done with this. There's something wrong here and I can't deal with it. And they will try to completely push that sector of their life away. So if it were a Boy Scout leader or a priest or a family member, that person would no longer be allowed close by.
Or even, I think about the younger child. I had a case where a toddler, preschooler, was continually rubbing and pointing to the genital area and talking about it hurt. Now, at 4 or 5 years of age, something's going on. Something is inappropriate. So, you know, you're going to see that behavior, I want to emphasize that, at all levels. When you talk about that severe change in behavior, whether they're 4 or 5 or 16 or 17, it's the severity and that change in behavior that is not the norm that should send those antenna up. Would you agree?
Exactly. And I was focusing on older children, and you were exactly right to point me back down towards the younger kids, too. Because if you see any kind of behavior in your child that has to do with pain in their genitalia, touching of their genitalia, sexualized behavior, anything like that, those are key signs. Because little kids, the little ones will, because so many of them, you know, barely have the language and they don't understand sex at all, they'll just come out and say something would have happened in the language that they have.
Right. Right, indeed. What should one do if they suspect abuse? How should they handle it? Where should they go?
Well, if you see abuse or your child is sexually abused, you pick up the phone and you call 911. And you don't second guess it. I mean, it's 911 people, that's what they're there for. They're there to take the calls. And they'll do triage, they'll figure out who to come, and someone will come to your house and take the interview and make sure your child is taken care of in a kind and compassionate way. If and then that's where if you see abuse or, you know, your child has been abused. But if you suspect abuse, and these are the things that, you know, your child tells you something that they saw, or you have suspicions, it's those things that keep you up all night long, mm-hmm. or you hear about children doing things to other children, and you don't, and it's like, gosh, you know, who do you call, what do you do, maybe it happened in another city or another state, that you call the National Child Abuse Hotline. And the number is 1-800-4-CHILD, number 4-A-CHILD. And they also have a website.
Okay.
And their hotline is manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by trained crisis operators who do nothing but talk to people who suspect something horrible's happened. And they'll walk you through it. They'll ask you questions. They'll ask you where you are, where the abuse occurred, what you've seen, and so on. And then they'll tell you exactly how to report. Because, you know, a lot of times we see things that are suspicious when we're 100 miles from home and we're in a different county or a different state, and we don't know who the local reporting authority is. But fortunately, the National Child Abuse Hotline has taken the question out of who to call, and they've taken the questions out of, gosh, what should I do? Because all calls and all reports are anonymous. So you don't have to worry about, you know, gosh, what will my neighbor think? They'll know I mm-hmm. called. Because it's not my job to investigate suspected child sexual abuse. It's my job to report it and to make sure that law enforcement does what they can to put any kind of predator behind bars and protect children.
You tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with Joelle Castec. We are exploring and examining child sexual abuse. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Joelle Castec, a national expert on the prevention of child sexual abuse and cover-up. She was victimized by her teacher at 15. Joins 411 Teen this hour. Joelle, is child sexual abuse on the increase, or have we just become more sophisticated in the identification of the abuse?
You know, right now, we don't really have any good data about child sexual abuse because it's a horribly underreported crime. And when we get convictions, many times those convictions are knocked down because of, you know, jail overcrowding and plea bargains. But I do know this, that the more we talk about it, the better protected our children are and the less vulnerable they are. And the more that law enforcement vigorously goes after these kinds of crimes, the less likely a predator will offend. So looking at my experience, what I have seen, even over the past 15 years, I believe our children are safer now than they ever have been. And I think that they are far more empowered to protect themselves. Law enforcement is far more empowered to prosecute crimes, and we're not keeping sex abuse a secret anymore. And so I think that we are hearing about it more because of the 24-hour news cycle and the mm-hmm. internet. Okay. But I think the instances of the crimes are going down in the United States because of our vigilance and our voice.
Well, what we're talking about is keeping one's child safe, okay? How do you do that with toddlers who may not have, again, the vocabulary or the knowledge to identify inappropriate behavior? Because even though this program is about teens and young adults, I mean, they got to get to that point. And sometimes, often, it may occur when the child is very young.
Yeah, and I think that it's really powerful to talk about child sexual abuse to teens because so many of them have been abused and don't really even understand
That's right.
What had happened to them yet. And so toddlers are a great group because they are so, they're just these little sponges and they absorb everything you tell them. And so this is when it is vitally important to give them the skills they need just to exist in the world. And that means communication, giving them the vocabulary, telling them the names of all their body parts. And for me and my son, this is something we did in the bathtub. Because, you know, we learned our head was our head and our shoulders were our shoulders and our knees were our knees and our penis was our penis and our testicles were our testicles. And there was nothing weird about it. There was nothing shameful about it. And we also learned that, hey, you know, we don't let anyone touch our liver, so we don't let anyone touch our penis. And there may be times when, you know, you're at the doctor with mom, but otherwise no one is allowed to do it. And it's a very easy rule, you know, you don't color on the walls and no one is allowed to touch your penis. And then we do the same thing on the other way because predators are smart. And for years,
exactly,
we had all of this safe touch, all these safe touch lessons. And it never, we said, oh, you know, this is where you can touch me safely. But we never told the kids, you never have to touch anyone else.
Right.
And so I'm very, you know, adamant with my son, too. It's like, hey, you don't touch anyone else's penis. You don't touch anyone's vagina. You don't touch anyone who does not want to be touched. You don't force them to hug you. You don't do any of that. And so that was a great way to start because it was just, it was like all the other rules in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And another big one, because we give our kids, and it's, you know, it's not our fault. We, no one gives us a manual when we become parents. But we give our kids so many mixed messages. We say, no one's to touch you, but boy, you go have to hug Aunt Edna.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I always tell parents, don't force your children and toddlers to hug or kiss anyone they don't want to. And what, because what you're doing,
you can't say that loudly or frequently enough. I know.
And when you force a kid to hug someone they don't want to, you're telling them it's okay for you to be touched in a way you don't want to be touched.
When you don't want
And you don't have to hurt anyone's feelings when you do it. Because, you know, a great thing to say is, oh, well, you know, it's cold and flu season, we shake hands. You teach your children respect. You teach them to make eye contact. You teach them to say hello. You teach them to smile when they see new people at the door. But you tell them that they don't have to let go of their body power in order to show respect.
Indeed. Often,
and those are the two biggest.
Mm-hmm. Any others you want to share?
You know, it's really about consistency, and then the other big one is because toddlers is when secrets come in,
right?
And secrets become very, very important, and especially as they get older and start entering school, and this is when it's important to teach the difference between a secret, which is something that no one is to ever know, and a surprise, which soon everyone will know what's it under the Christmas tree, the surprise party, and everything else. And so you teach your kid, you know, this is a surprise, and everyone's going to find out on Christmas, so don't go blabbing. And you tell them, but in secrets, if anyone ever asks you to keep a secret, it's wrong, and come tell mom. And even as kids get older, when we brought this up a little earlier, especially when with girls and they get to teenage years, even in my own abuse, I've asked my friends to keep my secret, and they did. And it became their burden to bear. And it hurt them almost as much as it hurt me. Whereas if those kids had been empowered with, hey, I don't have to keep this secret, I can help. Yeah. They could have been a positive force for change, but they didn't know how.
Right. Well, sometimes they're red flag behaviors that are exhibited by the peers that parents might pick up on. You want to share some of those that may, you know, the peers may know something that, no one else knows, but they don't know what to do with it.
Exactly. I mean, when your kids get older, especially at junior high is a good age, because now your kids know what sex is, they know how it happens, they understand, and that's when you can be blunt with them and say, hey, you know what? It is never okay for an adult to be sexual with a child, whether it's a teacher or a coach or a neighbor or someone else in a position of power. And if a friend of yours comes to you and says, hey, you know, I'm going out with Mr. So-and-so, that's not dating. That's sexual abuse. And you make sure you let them know that it is never okay for an adult to send text messages that talk about sex. to a child. It's never okay for an adult to send emails that talk about sex to a child.
Mm-hmm.
It is not okay for adults to talk about, you know, to be alone with a single teenager behind closed doors. Any kind of sexual behavior, whether it be making out or long hugs or any of that, that is never okay. And once you arm your kid with that information, because what happens, you know, if your kid doesn't know, their friend will come to them and say, yeah, I'm dating Mr. So-and-so. It's so cool. And your child who doesn't know is like, oh, yeah, I guess it is kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
But if you give them the information, they'll be like, hey, wait a minute. That's not okay. And this is hurting you. And you don't know it yet because you're still being groomed. And so it gives your child a whole lot of ammunition to be able to really tackle their world in a mature way, and that they can really be they can not only help themselves but also their friends.
Why is pornography referred to as the victimless crime? We see that so often.
Ugh, and
what a misnomer.
Too.
I know.
Well, and we've had cases even recently in California where people, you know, child pornography is seized on someone's computer, and,
mm-hmm.
and the person's boss will say, well, it's a victimless crime,
right.
Because because the abuse isn't happening in front of them.
Right.
And so it's a way that we minimize,
mm-hmm.
and we want to make things seem
mm-hmm.
less bad than what they really are. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of people who are on anti-pornography task forces.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what is contained in child pornography and when they tell you about it, it's pretty nasty stuff, because there's a child in there who is in the act of being sexually abused, whether it's by another child or an adult or whatever. Or they are salacious pictures of a child taken of the child with or without the kid's knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible and it's damaging, because it never goes away in our digital age. And especially for children who have pictures taken of them when they're being sexually abused by their perpetrator, and then they're sold through the dark net and other child pornography sites, that child lives in fear the rest of their lives that those photos may show up somewhere. And the thing about child pornography is that if anyone who has child pornography in their possession is in violation of federal law. And really, if you are excited or get sexual gratification out of child pornography, chances are that person is also sexually abusing a child, because there's
mm-hmm.
there's no boundary there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, child pornography is a federal crime that lands you in prison a long time, a much bigger sentence than actually sexually abusing the child. So, yeah, and it's because our laws are screwed up. But so it's an easy hop to sexual abuse. And in fact, there have been many abusers that we have not been able to get because we didn't have enough evidence of the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 times out of 10, they have child pornography on their computer, and we're able to
get
them on that.
Right. What about child-on-child sexual abuse? It's real, and it's common.
Mm-hmm.
And it's common. Yet we want to act like, oh, that doesn't exist. And it is very real.
It is very real, and it's horrible. And
uh-huh.
we don't want to think that things like that
I know.
Happen. We don't want to think that our beautiful children are doing horrible things to other beautiful children. But in the data that we have of cases that are reported, roughly 25% of sexual abuse on children is perpetrated by an older child. And that older child causes just as much damage
uh-huh.
to the victim as an adult. And that's where our system fails, because we have no way to really intervene and get ahead of the problem with these kids. I mean, we can look at the Josh Duggar case.
Mm.
Everything was swept under
right.
the rug, and he sent to some weird treatment facility that doesn't really do much treatment. Whereas if somehow, and this is where the system breaks down, if we had a great treatment program for child and teen offenders, we could really make a real change. But when we throw these kids into juvenile hall, we just turn them into varsity offenders, and we still have a bunch of damaged victims. So we have a lot of work to do. But when if a child comes to you and says, hey, I saw this happened, never be dismissive because the perpetrator was another child. because when you look at bullying, and bullying education and awareness has done wonders in preventing child sexual abuse, because we're teaching our kids to stand up and say, that's not good, and I'm reporting. Mm-hmm. And what happens in many cases of child-on-child sexual abuse is just bullying that has gotten out of control, because there's no greater way to make someone completely submissive than to do it through some kind of sexual abuse. And so, you know, the more we empower our kids to say something and the more we make it less viable for it to happen, so we demand that school restrooms, you know, that school bathrooms have their doors propped open in cases where there are stalls and privacy is still protected, that we don't condone any kind of bullying, that we make it okay for kids to report, and that we also tell our kids, hey, you know, it's not just adults who do this. It's also kids. So it doesn't matter who touches you, come to mom.
Joelle, in these last few minutes, we're talking, but we haven't identified how listeners can access your book. Where can they get your book? Joelle's new book, The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse.
Well, my book can be purchased in bulk if you'd like. It's available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
All right.
It's also available in a few select bookstores, but because bookstores are rapidly disappearing, I always encourage people go to Amazon. You get, you know, and it's available all over the place. So you go online. It's, again, The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse, and you can get it on Amazon, or you can also get more information on my website, which is just my last name, which is Castex, C-A-S. TEIX.com.
And these last few minutes, let's look at the internet. The internet presents another problem. In our technologically driven society, children are exposed at an early age. How does a parent counter this?
Well, I believe that a child should have every expectation of body privacy. But in the home, when it comes to the internet, a child should have no expectation of privacy when it comes to any kind of technology. That's why I encourage parents to monitor all internet-enabled devices. I encourage parents to make sure that all internet-enabled devices remain in public common areas of the home and are not allowed in bedrooms or bathrooms, and that you know who your children are communicating with. Because grooming on the internet and over cell phones and other technology is exactly the same as grooming in person, except if a child is being groomed over a cell phone or a computer and they're in the comfort of their own room, they're far more likely to let their guard down.
Important. Do you think that parents, well, what do you think? How do you think parents should approach their college students about drinking and drugs and sexual abuse?
Well, I believe that, you know, first of all, it's, again, back to open communication.
Uh-huh.
And when you talk to your college-age kid, you need to give them tools to understand that the world isn't paved in rose petals. And they need to understand that certain behaviors may have consequences. And the best way to keep themselves safe is to not engage in behaviors that have bad consequences. Because, you know, I would love to think that we all live in a world where it's okay for a girl or a guy to get drunk and pass out and that no one will sexually abuse them. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And we shouldn't say, well, I should still be able to get drunk and pass out. We tell our kids, hey, think reasonably about alcohol. Understand that your decision-making skills are going to go right out the window and that you may not be able to even defend yourself if you're passed out. So just don't engage in those behaviors, because if you want to stay safe, you have to engage in safe behavior.
Okay. I think to sum it up, you identified the three R's of parenting. Would you briefly go over those? Because I think they really encapsulate what we're talking about.
Oh, you have to make me refer back to my book.
Well, hey, I'll give you hints. Rules, respect, and relationships.
There you go.
Yes. So, you know, but I love
this book a year and a half ago. I forgot.
No, that's all right. You've covered so much, and it's been so helpful. But I wanted to have you just, you know, comment on those in this last, 40 seconds.
Yeah, it's, and that's it. Rules, respect, and relationships. You know, people need rules to understand mm-hmm. what is good behavior and how to stay safe. We need to have respect for our own bodies and for the bodies of other people. And we need to understand our relationships, not just with our children, but the relationships our children have with other adults and other and their peers to make sure that they are safe and that they are not being exploited or manipulated. You know, we don't have to live in fear. It is so much easier to protect our children now than it ever has been.
Well, Joelle, we are at the end, and I must extend to you a real sincere appreciation for you sharing your expertise with my listening audience. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.